Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
Here's a trick question for you. What does Thumper's mother and the character played by Patrick Swayze from Roadhouse 1 have in common? That's the question we're going to try to answer today. Oh, and Dale Carnegie. Yeah, Dale Carnegie. Oh, and John Maxwell. And lots of people agree with Roadhouse and Thumper's mother and John Maxwell and Dale Carnegie. And it could have saved us millions of dollars. That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. And the trick question of what do Thumper's mother, the character from Roadhouse, Dale Carnegie, John Maxwell, and dozens upon dozens of other leaders have in common is this. Thumper's mother said, if you can't say something nice, then shut up. Say nothing at all. And at Roadhouse, they ask, when should we throw him out? When should we start a fight? When do we engage? And he said, be nice. Well, what if they do this? Be nice. And if they do this and this and this and this and this, be nice. Well, how will we know when it's time to not be nice? He said, I'll tell you. But even then, be nice. Well, you can add to that what Dale Carnegie said. Give every man a fine reputation to live up to, and he will. Speak always in the terms of the other person's interest. John Maxwell said, see everybody as a 10. See, when you start adding these things together, they all sound like something that we've heard for thousands of years. I mean, it's an old idea, a really old idea, and when it's applied, it works. When it's applied, it works. See, in this series of leadership development, we threw out some questions and said, what are some things you'd like me to talk about? And one of the things that came back of things you should talk about is, how do you lead inclusively? And in my mind, because I've read Michael Eric Dyson and Ibram Kendi and many of the other books on anti-racism and DEI and CRT, and as I listen to some of the ideologies, what I realize is, generally speaking, there are an ilk of people, and yes, some have the same skin color. It's not always the issue. Some have the same religious background. It's not always the issue. Some have the same political worldviews, and it's not always the issue. But the issue seems to be people, not a group of people, not a division of people, but humans, who are lacking the affirmation that they should receive. Not because of their skin color, not because of their accomplishments or failures, not because they're victims, but because they're humans. And as humans, we all desire to be acknowledged, to be affirmed, to be appreciated. Just for somebody to look at us and go, I'm glad you're here. In fact, one of the constant themes in John Maxwell's teachings is, you can walk into the room as one of two kinds of people. You can be the person that walks in the room and goes, I'm here. Or you can be the kind of person that walks in the room and says, I'm so glad you're here. And to genuinely mean it. It's not a networking technique. It's a genuine value of humanity to appreciate the people that you spend time around. Whether you work for them or they work for you, whether they're clients or vendors or customers or neighbors or opponents, not relevant. What's relevant is they're human. Their skin color doesn't matter. Their national origin doesn't matter. Their age, their sex, who they sleep with, that doesn't matter. They're humans. Treat them like it. If we could all, as leaders, as managers, as business owners, as customers, as clients, just get back to that. For a moment, set aside our own feelings and emotions, our own wants, needs, and desires, and ask honestly, how can I make somebody else's day better? I was listening to a great conversation today between The guy who said Never Compromise, I believe is the name of his book. I have it on my desk. It's not in here. It's on my desk in the other room. But he's a hostage negotiator. He's taught at all of the major universities. He's taught law enforcement, FBI, et cetera, et cetera. And he was having a podcast interview with Dr. Jordan Peterson, who's quite the thinker. And between the two of them, they talked about how do you get your way? How do you negotiate? How do you get people to go along? How do you recognize? And he said, you know, it's not really hard when you understand that people have basic needs. And if you stop listening for your needs, what you want to win in this negotiation, and figure out how they define the win, everything changes. He said, I never fail to connect with the humans when I go through the airport and I get to the rental car counter and everybody else has yelled at them and berated them and demeaned them and humiliated them and taken advantage of them and demanded of them. I get to the counter and I treat them with respect, with courtesy, with dignity. I always tend to get what I want without even asking. It's amazing how that happens, that when you ready for this? When you treat other humans the way you as a human want to be treated. There's that 1,000-year-old idea. I mean, it's been around for at least 2,000 years. In fact, in some religious contexts, they call it the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Think of yourself getting everything that you want in life. Treat other people like that. Zig Ziglar said, you'll get everything you want in life when you help enough other people get everything they want in life. The key to it is not to be focused on you first. People don't like people like that. People don't want to spend time around people like that. People want to spend time around people who acknowledge them, affirm them, appreciate them, honor them, respect them. And in all honesty, if that was taught when kids were 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, if we countered the tyrannical tyrant of the toddler ages and said, you don't get everything you want. It's not about me, 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 me. It's not about mine, 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 mine. But instead, it's about understanding other people's wants, needs, and desires and helping to meet them. Dr. Peterson talked about a season in his life when he went into sales, and he said, I had created these products that I knew were genius, that I knew they were collaborated with some of the brightest minds in the world. I knew they would solve problems. But I went into the marketplace with them, and people looked at me like I had three heads. Not because it wouldn't solve a problem, but because they had not yet identified they had the problem. What's another way of saying that? Well, I was focused on what I have, what I have to offer, what I needed to sell, what I wanted to earn income from. And because that was my drive, that was my focus, that was where my attention went, I wasn't looking at the needs of the people. I never asked them, do you want one of these? Do you need one of these? Could I sell you one of these? No, I just went in assuming if I have it and they don't, they need to get it and I'm the one they need to get it from. How many people have been, if we were live, I would say raise your hand and feel free to drop it in the chat. But how many people would say, I've been in a workplace where no one ever asked me what I needed, what I wanted, how I could contribute, what my ideas were? I've always been told, sit down, shut up, stay in the corner, follow the instructions, do what you're told. I'd have to raise my hand and say for a large portion of my life, that was true. And for a large portion of my life, I was a manager who managed people rather than systems and processes until I learned how to lead people. And that's when I began to ask the question, how could this process, how could this system serve you better? What could we do to make it easier for you? In an ideal scenario, what would you want? What do you want out of this? How would you get it? And if I can figure that out as a leader, what you want, what you need, how you can get what you need, and I can discern whether that matches the needs of the team, that the organization overall will benefit when you get what you want. Because not only will you get what you want, but you getting what you want makes my life better. You getting what you want makes our whole team go to the next level. When that becomes the truth that drives every decision that you make, we don't need millions of dollars in DEI policies and new things coming down the pike as government regulations and things of that nature that make us behave in the way they want us to behave. We understand that everything we do in life is mutually beneficial. What we do for ourselves is because we're doing good for others and it benefits us. When leaders make decisions that say, I'm looking at the whole of the team, how can everyone go to the next level? How can we all be a little bit better? Inclusivity is the natural reaction to that. Now, I'm not going to lie and say there are times where just being inclusive, just giving everybody the appreciation, acknowledgement, and affirmation, they makes everything perfect and everything, all the problems go away. That would be a lie. It's not true. Why? Well, because we still have humans involved, and humans tend to be selfish. And selfish humans, they want to get their way. Selfish humans are less concerned about the overall team. They're more concerned about their own wants, needs, and desires. And that's realistic. It's human. It's our nature. But when it comes to the place where you have to decide what's best for the team, what's best for the individual, what's best for all of us together, that's when you start to make an assessment and say, okay, from a negotiation standpoint, how do we make this work for you, for me, for us, for everybody? And what if we can't? Well, at that point, do we need a government policy to come in and say, you will treat people that you cannot get along with in a specific way? You will hire them, you will promote them, you will give them jobs and give them raises, even though they don't like you and you don't like them. They're not productive for your team. They're not competent at their role. But by golly, because they fit this definition or this description, you will hire them and you will promote them and you will, or we will punish you financially, emotionally, socially. You'll lose your standing in business if you don't. See, that becomes a problem, right? One of the little books, and I'm going to share this little book with you. This is one of the little books from John Maxwell. When I say little books, I mean this is a really small book. It's less than 150 pages. On page 133, he addresses this issue out of a list of things that leaders are. I mean, there's a whole list. Is chapter 7. It says, how to develop the leaders. And I think there's a total of 8. Catalyst, influencer, relationship builder, gatherer, value adder, opportunist, and finisher. That's how you describe leaders. Here's number 3. Leaders are relationship builders. Quote, one thing that holds many talented and intelligent people back from being good leaders is a lack of people skills. Someone with weak people skills can become a reasonable good manager because management is focused on systems and procedures, but nobody without good people skills can be a great leader. When people on the team don't like someone, they will often try to hurt that person. If they can't cause harm, they will simply refuse to help. If they have no real choice and are required to help, they will be mentally and emotionally against the individual and will hope he or she doesn't succeed. And even if the person does manage to succeed, the victories he or she achieves will feel hollow and short-lived. Elevating someone with bad people skills is a recipe for failure. Good leaders like people, and people like them. They work at connecting with others and they continually look for opportunities to connect. See, one of the challenges we have in this whole management leadership thing is that it's easy to follow systems and procedures to do what you're told because policies have been written because they come down from on high. And they come down from on high because they meet the expectation of stakeholders. They meet the expectation of shareholders and money managers and manipulators and those who are willing to cancel you if you don't do the right thing. I was listening to an interview with the Benham brothers just before I hit start today. And they talked about how they were offered, and this is public information. It's out there on Facebook this morning. I've seen it live and in person at events as well. But they were offered an opportunity with HGTV. They were ready to launch a show. They had invested and done a whole lot of things successfully, and they're funny together, and they're twin brothers, and they've been successful in other areas. And so when they were offered a show, they were like, yes, duh. I mean, I didn't fall off the Turner truck yesterday. If you're going to offer me millions of dollars for unproven talent because of something else we've accomplished, bring it on. I'll take your money. But it was less than a year into it that other people said, wait. We don't like their ideas. We don't like what they believe in the world. Not what they've done, not what they've said, not where they've been, not who they've mistreated. None of those things came into play. It's just someone said, I don't like their ideas. Remember what he said right here. He said, when people on the team don't like someone, they will often try to hurt that person. If they can't cause them harm, they will simply refuse to help. See, there are a whole lot of people out there who like their victim identity. They like to be known for having been mistreated. In fact, many of them, they have no desire to work, no desire to succeed. They are the crabs who've chosen who've chosen to live in the bottom of the barrel with the only intent of pulling down anybody else who might try to climb out. There are people who live their lives that way. They get their thrills that way. They see a win in life when they can destroy someone else's success. And if they can destroy success because they disagree with an idea that you hold deeply, many of them don't even care if they agree or disagree with your idea. They just know that because you have an idea that you hold deeply, you have to make a choice. See, the offer came before the call out of the idea. The idea was there. The idea had been there all along. The belief system had been there all along. It had been part of their life, part of their core values from day one. And the offer came knowing that that idea was there. But when the idea was brought to light by the few crabs in the bottom of the barrel who desire to make sure that nobody succeeds, they went after the idea in a public financial way. The end result was the show that had been offered was canceled. They had several tapings done. They had several accomplishments done. They had several opportunities. But see, sometimes when you're in a leadership position and a management position, you have to operate both systems and procedures and work well with people. You have people in the bottom there. Your best negotiation with them is to find them another place to be, find them another place to work. But sometimes those people are completely outside of your ecosystem. You have no influence over them. You have no control of them. They're crabs in the bottom of the barrel who will snatch onto anyone who is succeeding. They enjoy the victimhood. How do we lead inclusively? Well, the truth of the matter is some people refuse to be included. You can love them all you want to. You can affirm them. You can acknowledge them. You can appreciate them. And they will still do their level best to destroy you, to see you canceled, to see you stripped away of any power, any influence, any success. Because in their mind, success is not letting anybody else succeed. Now, some of them get rich doing it. Many of them, that success is fleeting. Many of them, that success is hollow because they don't have the friendships, they don't have the people, they don't have the relationships around them that make life truly successful and enjoyable. Their accomplishment is someone else's demise. And that's it. And when they get what they wanted, they got nothing left. I listened to an interview earlier this morning of a guy who said a friend of his became a billionaire, ran a retail business and sold it for $2 billion. It nearly cost him everything. The $2 billion nearly cost him his marriage, cost him his business, cost him his investments, cost him his kids, cost him his health. Well, I thought getting rich was the answer. I thought getting rich was the end game. That was the goal. That was the prize. That was the win. Turns out, for many of us, it's true that the amount of money in the bank is less important than the amount of days that we have left. And how we've spent those days, the peace that we have because we've lived a life where we can look back and honestly say, I affirmed, I appreciated, I acknowledged people. I was the kind of person that people wanted to spend time with. Whether I made them rich or they made me rich was irrelevant. They wanted to be around me. A leader who is the kind of people that people like to be around will be a leader who has significant influence. Does that mean their bank account's going to be filled with zeros? Maybe, maybe not. If you're okay with that, then the day that you have to compromise and say, I'm willing to give up my strongly held beliefs, I'm willing to give up what I know to be true, because my paycheck goes away if I don't, that day will never really come. The ability to step away and go, you know, this is a relationship that's not amenable and I can't fix it. So one of us has to find another opportunity. And if that has to be me, it will be me. But what I won't do is compromise what I know to be true, what I believe deeply, my deeply held convictions and beliefs. I don't set those aside for anybody. The woman that I chose to marry 30 years ago, a large portion of our success in our marriage hasn't always been pretty. I put her through hell for the first 10 years easily. There are probably still days that she's like, I'd rather you lived in a box and not right next to me. I'm sure that's true from time to time. But the success that we've enjoyed in our relationship is directly tied to the fact that we have a set of strongly held, commonly shared, mutually appreciated core beliefs. If you're in a relationship and that's not the case, I don't care if it's your boss, your neighbor, your siblings, your children, or your spouse. If you have strongly held beliefs and they're not mutually shared, it's going to be really hard to have that kind of long-lasting relationship. The key to that is even when those core beliefs don't exist, even when those values are not the same, you only have to have one to hold on to. If you can learn what it means to value humanity, to look at another person and say, I acknowledge you, I affirm you, I appreciate you. That doesn't necessarily mean I like you and I want to go hang out with you. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have a long, lifelong friendship. It means I see you as a human being worthy of love and respect. And I'm going to treat you that way. There's an Indian word for that. I believe it's an Indian word. It may be a religious word. I'm not sure, but it's called namaste. It means I see the divine in you. I see the divine in you. I don't see you as second class. I don't see you as second rate. I don't see you as less than. I don't care about your age, your race, your religion, your sexual orientation. I'm not concerned about any of that. I look at you as a living, breathing human being. And for that reason, I include you with acknowledgement, with affirmation, with appreciation, with love and respect. If you lead like that, if you lead like that, you lead with inclusivity. And you don't need a government program or a bunch of policies or a whole lot of money thrown at it. It should become the nature of who you are. When you lead like that, you like people. And people like you, you'll be a more successful leader. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.